When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
TC Live with you on a Sunday morning here in the States, Sunday late afternoon in Monte Carlo, and we have got ourselves a new champion along that beautiful coast of the Mediterranean, and it is the same as the old champion from 2021 and 2022. Stefanos Tsitsipas behind some blistering forehands and an aggressive game plan with lots of serve and volley today wins his third Masters 1000 title, all of them right there in Monte Carlo. As we welcome you to TC Live on this Sunday in Monaco, he was fearless and fortune did favor him. So glad you're with us as we celebrate the new champion in Monte Carlo with Paul Annacone here in the studio, Andy Roddick at the home office. I'm Brett Haber. We'll get you back to the court for the trophy presentation in just a couple of minutes, but I want to get everybody's first thoughts on this final. Andy, absolute one-way traffic in that opening set, and then Steph fending off all kinds of chances for Rude in that second set.
Yeah, credit to Steph, not just in this match, but for the entire tournament, right? Was drilling Zverev up a set 5-0. Zverev comes back, wins a nervy breaker to give himself a shot, down 4-2, some, you know, controversy with a call, Sinner maybe not at his physical best, finds a way to get through that, grinds through this second set. That's what you have to do to get back to the level that Tsitsipas wants to be at. I thought his game plan was great. He was really attacking the forehand side of Casper to create space with that forehand, Casper's forehand, and with that backhand line kind of exposing it, which opens up the backhand when you need it. I thought a game planning, it was 10 out of 10 for Steph today.
27 net approaches for Tsitsipas. I know that warmed your heart.
Yeah, no, it was great. I mean, it was great to see Steph play dynamic tennis, and that's the difference between the two. Casper is pretty one-dimensional, likes to stay at the back of the court, dictate with his forehand. And Stefanos Tsitsipas loves clay, but he likes to come forward on clay. And you watch the way he creates his ground strokes and the way he finds space. It matches up perfectly when he executes the right strategy. Hence, 1-4 in the finals.
Now, you called this match with Jason Goodall, and you called Steph's matches all week long. He didn't look anything like the guy, Tsitsipas, who made just one quarterfinal in his first six events of the year. To your eye, what was the difference for him this week?
I think Andy just said it early on, which was he's grinding through, right? He maybe shouldn't have gotten here. He got through a really awkward match with Zverev where it should have been routine, wasn't. Got a little bit fortunate with Sinner, but did a good job mentally throughout. So he found ways to get through playing what I would categorize average tennis for how gifted he is. And then in the big moment, bang, today he stepped up and played a really high class, high level play match. And not only tennis wise, but strategically, which was really well done.
Obviously, the conditions agree with Tsitsipas. His mom won this tournament back in the early 80s, and he's now won it for the third time. Here's his path, Andy, to the title, including obviously the signature win over Sinner in the semifinals. Does it take anything away for you, the fact that Sinner got the bad call that avoided the double break lead for him? Does that put an asterisk on this title for Tsitsipas?
There's no such thing as an asterisk when you win. when you win more sets than the other people, there is no such thing. That's life. That happens. I'm sure Steph has been in many positions over the last couple of years when he's been playing maybe less than his normal standard, where he's gotten some bad luck. So you take it. The key is taking advantage of the opportunity that presents itself. Like Paul just mentioned, take the wins and then make it count. He made it count today against Casper Ruud.
He did, and you can only beat the guys in front of you, and you can only accept the line calls as they are delivered to you by the chair umpire and the lines people. Let's show you how this one went down. The last time these guys met on a clay court was in Madrid 3 years ago. Obviously, very different conditions there with the altitude. And those conditions apparently agreed with Casper Ruud as he took Tsitsipas out 7-6 and 6-4. That was Ruud's first career top five win. So 3 years later, they would meet again with a Masters 1000 title on the line, and Andy, Tsitsipas was quick out of the gate.
Yeah, and he was great. You see him right there, like we were talking about, attacking that forehand side. Casper likes to settle in and hit forehands from right where he is right there. Tsitsipas, great defensively. Listen, Casper gave away a lot of those. He was hitting that forehand when he was set in the net today. Tsitsipas exposing him, saying, listen, if you're going to hit forehands, you're going to be outside, and I'm going to take the opportunity once I create the space, hit that backhand line. Not an easy shot. He was 8 feet behind the baseline there. Just like you, Habs, can take that one up the line when he needs it.
Damn right.
Same sort of, that's right, same sort of talent level. But listen, it was just dominant. As Paul said, the transition game was on point. Not as easy to pick and choose your spots coming in, but he did a lot, especially Ovechkin balling, asking Casper the question over and over, are you going to adjust your return position in the toughest moments? And the answer was no. And then, again, attacking that forehand side, getting what he wanted, realizing the shot. That's the perfect point for him to win it on because it's what he executed well all week long. Well done.
All right, respect from Rude and Tsitsipas towards one another, and Steph celebrates because he is back. It's been a very pedestrian start to the year for this man, but he is back in the win column. These are the stats from the match, Paul. Rude 0 for 8 on break points. You can't say he didn't have his chances in that second set.
Yeah, and the biggest thing that jumps out at me besides the 0 for 8 is 68% second serve points success rate for Steph, and only winning 60 on his first. Why is that? Because Casper really didn't change second serve return position. And when you give someone that's dynamic like Steph Tsitsipas that much space to do whatever they want to do on the second serve, then they can create lots of ways. I can serve and volley on the second serve. I'll hit a kicker, then rip my forehand. It gives them too many options. And I think Casper did a good job for part of the second set changing some of the direction. But like Andy said, at the biggest moments, did he dare to step in on the second serve return on break point, take it early then? Those times he kind of shied away and did what he's most comfortable with, which, by the way, is human nature, but that's not what gives you trophies.
So he is a guy, Casper Ruud, we need to remind ourselves and everyone else, who's made 3 major finals, 2 of them at Roland Garros, playing essentially, Andy, that style of tennis, but against the fence to return serve. Why has it worked so often for him in the past, but it didn't really work at all today?
Yeah, well, what we're asking about is basically matchups, right? Like Steph can hit that little bunny kick on the ad side that finds Casper's back end, whereas a lot of the people that he probably went through for the amazing results that you mentioned, Brett, he's getting a forehand on that ad side. You have to adjust based on the matchups. My stock game was good against 95% of the tour, and then I played a bunch of the guys that Paul coached in the past, and it just didn't quite work that well. You know, the top players, when they're in flight, they force you to make decisions that you're uncomfortable with. So comparing, you know, the decisions made today versus a third round at Roland Garros against someone who his game matches up well against isn't the same conversation. Frankly, Steph asked him to make an adjustment. It wasn't an adjustment he was willing to make, and he ran out of time. Credit to Steph.
Casper Ruud has won 10 singles titles, but he hasn't won anything above the 250 level. He is a specialist, as Nick Kyrgios once pointed out, at all the ski resorts in Europe after Wimbledon, the Stads and the Bostads and the Kitzbühels. Is that a, with all proper respect, is that a little blemish on his record so far?
I think it's a little harsh, actually, from Nick. He got to the finals of the ATP Championships indoors. He got to the finals of the U.S. Open. He got to the finals of Miami. So it's not like he can't play on the other surfaces. Yeah. He just hasn't won the title. So yeah. I understand the urgency to try to win, but it's not like that's the only spot he's getting his points from. So he can play on all the surfaces. And just to tag what Andy said, the reason that he's successful on all the other surfaces is the same reason why he's able to return from deep in the court is everyone, 99% of the people play the same way now. He can stay 30 feet behind the baseline because no one serves in volleys. And he's talking about matchups. Steph can throw in a serve and volley once in a while. Unless you're great at it, you're going to create opportunities just by doing that. Well, guess what? Casper Ruud's one of the best in the world at playing from 20 feet back to start the point. So why change it?
Well, maybe why change it is what we saw today and what we've seen in all those finals that you just mentioned. Look, Rafa won 22 majors returning from the fence, but Casper Ruud, with all respect, is not Rafa. Does he ultimately need to make a change if he wants to get across these lines, Andy?
When the matchup calls for it. Yeah. I do want to, like, the Kyrgios criticism is a little weird to me because Casper's made 2 more Grand Slam finals than Nick. I'm pretty sure Nick hasn't won a Masters 1000 either. So what are we talking about? Like, the finals of Washington? Like, his career high, Casper, is 2 in the world. Like, I don't know that he has that soapbox to stand on with that criticism.
Okay, I imagine there'll be a response from Kyrgios on the next edition of Good Trouble.
It's fact. What did I say? That I was all true. Like, show me the lie, and I'll tell you.
No. It being true doesn't often stop Nick from responding. But so, you know, we'll see what he has to say, and he's certainly entitled to his thoughts.
I understand his point. It's just that Casper has those the finals and huge events, right? Finals ATP, yeah. Finals of U.S. Open, finals of Miami. So it's not like he's got no points from the other surfaces.
He also did get a walkover into his one Wimbledon final, it should be noted.
Get to the Wimbledon final?
What's that?
Did Casper get to the Wimbledon final?
No, he got to the U.S. Open final. No, I mean Nick got a walkover to the Wimbledon
I can't keep
final.
Up with the train of thought. It's, just it's kick fine. Me under the table.
I'll try to use more punctuation in my future thoughts. The commas are very important here. They're ready to hand out the trophy. Let's go back down courtside. You'll recognize the voice of Mark Mowry, who does all the PA stuff at Roland Garros. He's in charge here, too.
Durex Monte Carlo Masters 2024, le Norvégien Kasper Ruud. Du Rolex Monte Carlo Masters 2024, il obtient son troisième titre en principauté, le grec Stefanos Tsitsipas. The third title here at the Rolex Monte Carlo Masters for Stefanos.
His Serene Highness Prince Albert of Monaco congratulating Steph on his third title. This is becoming a habit. Leader of the principality and a former Olympian himself.
Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Career title number 10 overall, now 10 and 17 in finals.
Of Greece.
First, I would like to congratulate Steph for winning Monte Carlo once again. I guess you love this tournament now, and very, very well played all week. I know you fell out of the top 10 a few weeks ago, but you're back again where I think you belong, and you're a fantastic player, and especially here on clay in Monte Carlo. It's fantastic, so congratulations to you and your team. And I would like to thank Prince Albert and your family for welcoming us to play here in this beautiful club of yours every year. I must say, it's probably the most beautiful tennis club in the world, so thank you for inviting us, and we enjoy our time every year. And to the fans and people of Monaco, I know it's a lot of people from here, also Italian, French, even Norwegian that came down today. So thank you for following along all the week. I'm sorry I couldn't put on a better performance today, but hopefully I can be back with another chance another year. And just wanted to say thank you for the support from everyone, and hope you had a good time. And to my own team, almost everyone is here today. It's still a couple missing, but people or my team flew in from Spain this morning, from Norway, from everywhere to come and watch me. And again, I'm sorry we couldn't get the win this time, but I feel like we're getting closer to a big title. So I'm looking forward for hopefully getting another chance in the future, continuing to work hard together and hopefully break that last barrier of winning a big tournament like this. So thank you.
Stefanos, please.
Well, Casper, I'd like to start by saying it's not bad ending up here after having started in Santa Margherita di Pula a few years ago at the Futures Circuit. I was thinking about it a few moments ago. So congrats to you, congrats to your team for this amazing journey we both had to end up here. I don't know if you guys know, but me and Casper started, we date back a long time, same age category. So we've been playing from the smallest course you can imagine to ending up here in front of you, playing in front of amazing crowds, Italians, French, Monegasque. It's been an unbelievable journey. So I'd like to pay tribute to that. Years ago, if you would have told me it would have been three, I would not have believed you. So, you know, it's truly unbelievable. The support I've been receiving here in the last couple of years from pretty much everyone, you know, the whole week was wonderful. I'm happy that, you know, I have such a supportive team by my side. In addition to that, we've been going on strong for many years. So thank you for sticking by my side and being loyal to me. It's been the thing that I treasure the most. I would like to thank Monaco for inviting me with their arms open a few years ago, in 2018, late 2018. I came here and started residing in Monaco, so the experience so far has been amazing. Has opened a lot of doors for me, being also ambassador of the Princess Charlène Foundation. It's something that I truly enjoy, and I'm hoping to do a lot of things together in the future. So thank you for considering me and having me by your side. Last thing, not to keep you in the heat, because it's been an exhausting afternoon here. Guys, thank you so much. I would like to thank the ball kids, the drivers, everyone has contributed to the tournament. You guys, I know you already for a long time. Thank you for taking care of the courts. I'm hoping we can build more memories in the future. This club is truly the most beautiful club in the world. I say it every single year I'm here. I hope bigger things can keep coming for this tournament to grow even bigger and become even more of an iconic place around the world. So I would like to thank everyone for making this possible.
So nice speech from Stefanos Tsitsipas, who makes his home in Monte Carlo and has for a number of years as he strikes the pose with the royal family and his vanquished opponent for the third time, 21, 22, and 24. And he joins some rather elite company of men in the Open era, having won this title three times or more. Rafa, of course, that's ridiculous, with 11. Borg, Muster, and Nastasi. It should be pointed out also that prior to the Open era, Henri Cochet, member of the Four Musketeers, won it three times. And Nicola Pietrangeli won it three times in the 60s. He was in the crowd today to watch Steph win his third. So, Tsitsipas lifts the trophy for a third time in Monte Carlo. Much more to come as we get ready for Barcelona and Stuttgart starting tomorrow. I'll be back in a moment.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Celebration continues on what many consider to be the most beautiful tennis court in the world. Stefanos Tsitsipas, winner for the third time, technically on French soil, but at the Monte Carlo Country Club. He's going to chat with Prakash in just a couple minutes. Glad you're with us on TC Live on this Championship Sunday. Brett and Paul and Andy. Andy, you were watching the match. How did Steph tactically keep Casper from doing damage with his forehand today?
Well, what Casper Ruud wants to do is get into the left corner, right, where the backhand is, and pump forehands and get a hold of the point, kind of like Rafa does. When that spin profile gets up, he's got you. Steph did an unbelievable job of creating space to that side and then attacking the forehand side of the court, right? So Casper never really got set and was able to hit two or three forehands in a row from that corner. There's one. Steph takes him to the forehand side, creates this space, and then finds the backhand, right? So it's not as simple as everyone's sitting at home saying, just go to the back end. No, you have to create the spacing that gives you the opportunity to go into that back end side. Again, pulling him to the forehand, opening up the court, opening up the drop shot, but basically exposing and making Casper, expose that backhand side there, and then creating a space and then taking it to that forehand side and then finding the back end. So it's that because he hit it so well to Casper's strength, he was able to create space to either get in or find Casper's weaker side, which is the back. He did an unbelievable job of it all day. So one there, hits one forehand, and then exposes the space that he just created. He did it over and over again, establish that pattern very, very early in the first set. And if you're Casper, what are your options? Trying to hit a backhand line, which is your least favorite shot to hit. One there, and then step the next ball, created this, went into the space that he created. That was a pattern that he established very early. And that's also why Casper may have been a little bit of gun shy about his court positioning, because Steph was able to kind of bleed him to the open spaces over and over. All of that happens. It's all a bit of a chess match out there. It's not as easy as the tennis fans going, you know what, just hit it to his back end. I promise you we thought of that.
Paul, you've been singing that song for a long time. I've gone to school on your coaching advice, which is don't just pick on a guy's weakness, go into his strength. But go in heavy.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's a simple philosophy. It's just not that easy to execute, as Andy said. You go big to their strength to make the weakness really, really glaringly available to hit to. The more you go to one side, the smaller that target gets. And the hard part for Stefanos, for Casper, is Stefanos might be the best guy on tour when you go to his forehand. Stefanos is one of the best out of the forehand corner because he can do two things. He can rip it from there, but also what he does unbelievably well is he hits it hard and comes forward. So he is a little bit more complicated, and what Andy harped on was exactly right. Casper, when you push him hard to the forehand corner, usually is really deep in the court, so he gives you more time. You hit it aggressively there, and then you make him hit the two-hander on the run.
Stefanos is one of those guys who plays doubles almost every week on tour, Andy. Maybe even too much, but we saw maybe some of that double skills manifest itself in how well he volleyed today. Maybe saw some of the dividends of that.
Or he's just a really good volleyer naturally through years and years and years of work. The thing that is fun to watch with Steph, especially on the surface, is that he doesn't have to adjust barely any parts of his game, right? He gets on the clay, he gets in warm clay conditions, and everything about his game becomes 10% better, right? That little bunny kick on the second serve out wide on the ad side, doesn't need to force it with pace. He's able to kind of lay back on returns and find some air a la, you know, Tommy Haas used to do it really well and flip that up. And then the transition game, he's one of the only people that when he gets on clay, he can kind of almost slide into his approach shots as well. And it kind of cuts off the angles. But listen, he gets onto a clay court, every single thing that he does well gets a little bit better, and his weaknesses aren't as exposed.
Well, he certainly hid the weaknesses today and exploited his strengths, and Tsitsipas is assumed the position, and he's ready for a chat with Prakash, guys.
Steph, what an unbelievable performance out there today. Congratulations. I think the consensus was there was more pressure on you, given your experience in finals and having 1-2 here, but boy, did you handle it well today.
It was completely nerve-wracking. I was thinking, this is my chance. I got one match point. I got to make it, and I did, and that was the most proud moment of the whole match, that I was able to stick to something, and I completed it. So it was there was a lot of tension in that particular point. I was trying to play the ball as deep as possible. It kept kind of falling short and short. I'm like, no, I got to fix it. So it came with a beautiful, nice winner down the line, an elevating moment. And that trophy feels so much more special than the number one or number two.
Steph, given your impeccably high standards, I'm sure you didn't start the year the way you wanted to, and now you're playing just the most spectacular tennis. How important was this whole week for you?
It's important. It puts me back into a sort of a clearer perspective of where my game stands at. There are ways to improve as well. I feel like I've seen certain things that I did on the court that I could improve for sure. So, you know, I walk away humble through victory. And I'm hoping to improve small things to continue on that path, because I've built that beautiful journey so far throughout so many years of hard work, and I want to just continue embarking on that beautiful journey and continue playing that cohesive, well-narrated tennis.
This is your most successful season, the clay court season. You've gotten off to a perfect start now on the road to Roland Garros leading up to that, and then, of course, the Olympics on clay as well. What would you like to see now moving forward?
Well, I would like to see a lot of consistency on the clay courts. and I would love to see myself continue the way I've been playing this week. It's a great assessment of where my potential stands at. So, you know, I take away positive things out of it. You know, the stadium here is beautiful. I was just enjoying the whole atmosphere the whole week. I think that adds to my excitement to want to go out there on the court and just contribute my way. There are many tournaments that I will have to continue concentrating on. There's Barcelona, Madrid, Rome. I'm hoping to build on those and go into the Roland Garros well-prepared for a big fight there.
You're in a beautiful place, my man. Keep it going.
Thank you, Prakash.
We'll add our thanks to Prakash and our congratulations to Steph as he lifts that up for the third time. And he mentioned Roland Garros, so we will too, Paul. Based on what he did this week with Djokovic and Alcaraz and Sinner and always Rafa part of the conversation in Paris, where does Steph fit into the mix?
He's right in the group of the top favorites, right? I mean, I never like to draw a favorite after one tournament on clay, unless, of course, Rafa's playing. Mm-hmm. And even when Rafa's not playing, he's still the favorite. So I think Steph's in that conversation of the top few people to pick in a clay court season. He's got a lot of tennis ahead of him. So there's still a lot of big clay court tennis before Paris and then the Olympics afterwards, further along down the line. So a lot of clay court tennis, but he's right there with the top group.
He got right to the doorstep in 2021, Andy. Two sets to love up in the final on Novak Djokovic. Could you picture a scenario where Stefanos Tsitsipas wins Roland Garros?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, listen, if the guy's in form and he's already proven he can be, you know, six games away from victory, the potential's certainly there. I don't, to Paul's point, I don't know that we take 1 week, value it in a silo, the same as we value 4 years. I still think it's Novak. I still think it's a healthy center. Alcaraz is going to get into this clay court season mix. The big if is, will Rafa be healthy? If he is, do you put him ahead of Steph? I don't know. I think there's kind of that core three that are bankable, and then there's some question marks, but I think Steph has reestablished himself just right outside that top three.
All right, let's show you where we stand after the third Masters 1000 of the year in terms of the race. This is, of course, the year-to-date points accrued. Rude moves up to number four. Tsitsipas now inside the top eight on the road to Turin. Djokovic outside the top eight at number nine.
Yeah, it's always tricky with Novak because he's not playing very much this year, and he's going to have to find that balance between enough matches so that he's confident when he gets to the majors. But he will be there or thereabouts if he's healthy. But some great new names. And, hey, Andy, I think there's two one-handed backhands in the top 10 now.
Hey, listen, everyone loves a throwback, Cone. Everyone loves a throwback.
The drought was brief. Dimitrov and Tsitsipas back in the top 10 now. We've got a lot more to get to on this Sunday TC Live. We'll continue to celebrate Steph's win in Monte Carlo, and we'll show you how Team USA clinched in Orlando last night. Back in a moment. Back on TC Live, have you joined the Second Serve Nation yet? If you haven't, it's time to give them a look. They are the most unpredictable show on tennis television. This week, Jason Goodall joins Chiz and Nick Monroe for shenanigans and hijinks and guests and analysis. It all begins 11 a.m. tomorrow on T2. If you don't think you have T2, you actually probably do have T2. It's on most streaming services and built into most new TVs. Billie Jean King Cup qualifiers wrapped up last night. Only one of the eight qualifier ties went to a live fifth rubber. That was the one between Ukraine and Romania, which was held in Amelia Island, Florida, because of the war in Ukraine. Anna Bogdan for Romania beat Elena Svitolina earlier in the day in singles. Then she teamed up with Jackie Christian to win the deciding doubles point. And with that, Romania gets back into the World Group Finals. Congratulations to them playing on neutral ground. There was no such drama, however, down the road in Orlando. Team USA entered Saturday with a 2-0 lead on Belgium, Paul, and Jessie Pegula wasted no time.
No, she sure didn't. The first day was a little bit challenging for Team USA. Lost opening sets in both of the singles matches. A little bit of nerves, a lot of pressure, and different kind of pressure, but they got through. It was very different when Jessie took to the court yesterday, played some great tennis. Look at that score line. Power tennis from the back of the court. High percentage stuff, a lot of confidence, and much more calm and composed, I believe, was the whole Team USA. After that first couple of points got on the scoreboard, things got going very quickly for Jessie Pegula. You could see the comfort from which she dictated play during the rallies, used the great court positioning, high percentage offensive tennis, just stretched the lead 6-2, 5-0, and there was no turning back for Jessie or Team USA. Just a terrific way to round things up for the team.
Just needed 51 minutes to clinch the tie, and so the U.S. will vie for their 19th Cup title this fall. Caroline Dolahide and Taylor Townsend added a doubles win. So these are the nations now that make the finals. Canada as the defending champ. Italy was the runner-up. Spain is the host. Czech Republic is the wild card. And the other eight qualifiers from this past weekend, it'll take place in Seville in Spain. So as we welcome you back into the studio, we've had a couple of years now for this new Billie Jean King Cup format. I know a lot of people still don't like the single neutral venue for the final in the fall. But one thing that the women have now, Andy, is that they only have to have a one-week commitment this week that we just had to get to the finals. Is that a good thing or not a good thing?
I don't know. I just get frustrated with a lot of these team competitions just because they had total control over the event for so long, right? And it was within their control, and they chose not to make any adjustments when the calendar suited them, when they had control over their weeks. And now it seems a little disjointed, which is unfortunate. And the mandatory weeks, I'm kind of from the old school, where it's like, listen, let's make a convincing event so that players want to play, where it's not like you're feeling like you have to in order to use it for something different, whether it's Olympic qualification or whether it's something else. I don't like the doubles being the last match. I understand they're trying to condense it into 2 days, but it is a place for doubles to really shine. Yeah. That's becoming less and less of an opportunity for doubles. The Bryans, it was unbelievable. They had a showcase for 15,000 people every day back in the day on that middle Saturday. That was their time. I like that a little bit more, but I certainly understand that pointing out problems is easy and solutions are tougher.
Yeah, but it's all those things are spot on. I mean, the biggest challenge is now with the jammed calendar, and everybody has proprietary values that they see for themselves in terms of what they're trying to protect. But when you look at Billie Jean King Cup and you look at Davis Cup and the fact that it's spread over through so many weeks throughout the year, the average sports person can't keep up with it. It's very difficult to get new people involved based on those events, which is a shame because they are cornerstones of our sport. So I think there needs to be a way to try to figure out how to fix it. As Andy said, it's easy to complain about. The solutions are not easy because it's a very complex equation with a lot of countries involved and a lot of funding to countries that don't get funding because of this event. So I wish we could figure out how to do it better. I don't like the format right now.
And on top of all that, there's now the United Cup and the Laver Cup, and the Hopman Cup was supposed to return this year, but they canceled that because of the Olympic year. Everybody likes team competitions. They just got to dial in on a format that everybody likes and can commit to. We've got more to come on TC Live. Steph continues to celebrate. He spent a little FaceTime with F1 driver Charles Leclerc, who is a Monte Carlo native as well. We'll be back with Best of the Best in just a moment. That was one of them.
In best.
All right, best of the best time. We start with number five, as always, which goes to Emma Navarro. Far court here, Andy, with the slap shot forehand.
And you know I like a relevant hot shot, especially. It just hits a little sweeter when you're trying to serve a match out for your country. The last second, the Flipper Magoo cross court. Love that one, Brett.
The Flipper Magoo. I didn't know that had an official name.
Full flipper.
Okay, let's go to number four, Nicholas Jarry in Monte Carlo, Paul.
Tell you what, every time you open up on look at different shots, I like to see creative ones. What's hard for a big guy to do? How about a backhand overhead from 20 feet behind the baseline?
Oh, my goodness.
Andy's got some memories of this from a Swiss guy that did it on the forehand side against Andy.
I'm sure I don't know what you mean, but Jarry, always useful. You need someone who can get something off the top shelf. He is tall, I'll tell you that.
All right, let's go to number three. Emma Raducanu won two singles for England this week. This was her masterpiece, Andy.
Yeah, and I think this is going to end up, when we look back, being a big weekend for Raducanu, winning two tough matches with a lot of pressure. Oh, and having the sweet little backhand pass here. Not even Anacone could have covered that one.
Well, he is quick.
Was this more impressive than her not realizing that this match wasn't over at 5-1 in one of the sets? Did you guys see that?
Hey, listen, you're coming up with passing shots like that. You're not worried about it. You're going to win either way.
Okay, there you go.
You're teasing people about being bad at math now, Paul? Here's number two, Grigor Dimitrov.
That's just your routine cross-court behind-the-back pass. Get it? You always have to practice this one because you want to make sure you get it low at the volleyer's feet. Grigor gets around the outside of the ball to get a little more dip at it to get it at his feet. Pretty good stuff right here.
Another thing for Holger Rune to be bitter about this week, including his warning and everything else. Here's number one. Andy, I don't know how many times Gael Monfils has been number one, but here's another one.
Yeah, it's so weird to see him as a hot shot. And especially when it's a shot that's kind of unnecessary with the left hand right there. Seems to be the specialty. You might as well not get down a break point by hitting a lefty volley winner. Obviously, that's the percentage play there, Brett. It would have been too easy to leave that other hand on it.
Yeah, good shot selection.
Choked way up on the stick and got it done. So Monfils is number one, as he has been so many times, as we bring you the social net on this Sunday. And our one piece of news is a little unfortunate from Carlos Alcaraz, and that is that he will not be defending his title in Barcelona, announcing this morning that that same arm injury that kept him out of Monte Carlo, Paul, is going to keep him out of Barcelona as well.
Yeah, it's starting to get a little disconcerting. Look, there's plenty of time leading into the French Open, but just whenever you see young players that start to get injured a lot, it just makes me worried a little bit. And obviously this kid's a tremendous athlete, and let's just hope that this injury gets out of him very quickly. But look, two tournaments, that's a significant loss.
Yeah, you know he doesn't want to miss any of these clay court events, especially in his home country. I guess the silver lining is that it's an arm injury. Hopefully it's not structurally off. That would be a lot more concerning. But at least he can keep his legs in shape, right? He's not going to be risking fitness with the arm injury. It's not as if he's going to come back, hopefully not looking for his pacing with his legs, his movement. He can still do all of those drills. Better safe than sorry. He has entered the part of his career where you start at the slams and work backwards with your priorities. Hopefully that's what he's doing here.
And I didn't know where my pronator Teres was, but now I know it's somewhere under that bandage that he's got wrapped around his arm. Let's remind you of the schedule for next week on Tennis Channel. The men have the 500 in Barcelona, plus 250s in Munich and Bucharest. The women will be in Stuttgart and Rouen, France. And we'll have you covered on Tennis Channel T2 and TC Plus starting at 5 a.m. Eastern each day. And let's talk about who is going to be there, since we just talked about Carlitos not being there. And it's Rafa, who has won that event, what, 12 times? What I know we need to mitigate our expectations, Andy, because he's played so little, but it's so hard to regulate our expectations when we see this guy on a clay court, isn't it?
Well, it's the same thing. Like, we criticize Djokovic and people get all mad and say, you know, but we're judging these guys against the massive shadows that they've created, right? But Rafa, it needs to be a little bit of a sliding scale. He needs to get through this tournament healthy. If he can get a couple of matches in with a day in between, that is a success, right? If he wins his first round, goes down to the demon second round, but says coming out of it, I feel good, I can serve, I can move, you take that. That's a 12 out of 10 result. He needs the matches. I have no doubts that if he's healthy and can get a little on-court work in match situations going into the Roland Garros, he will be okay there. I'm not worried about his tennis. I'm worried about his body.
Well, the reason we don't know what to expect from Rafa is because he's played so little in the last year and a half. Take a look at his entire resume of matches since the ATP Finals in 2022. Paul, he's only played three official tournaments since then.
Yeah, just incredible. You remember the loss to McDonald at the Oz Open in 2023. The thing that's really too bad is that the beginning of the year in Australia, he looked good. Mm-hmm. He was playing well without having a lot of match volume, which is atypical for Rafa. He usually needs a lot of volume to feel comfortable, but I'm totally on the Andy Roddick bandwagon about I'm not worried about the tennis for Rafa. Stay healthy. If he stays healthy and he can stay physically fit, his biggest asset is the fact that he's won Roland Garros 612 times, mm-hmm. because he can go there and actually beat probably 80 to 90% of the players at about 70% Rafa. The last 10%, he needs a little more. But if he can stay healthy and get to that point, he's still going to be one of the favorites.
All right, Rafa against Flavio Ciboli in the first round. And if he gets past that, it would be Demonor in the second. Demonor actually beat him at United Cup last year. We also want to talk about Naomi Osaka, who is back on the clay for the first time since returning from her maternity leave. Andy, clay has not been her favorite surface. She has never won a clay court title. She's never been past the third round at Roland Garros. What should our expectations be for Naomi?
Muted. There's a lower ceiling for Naomi on this surface compared to every other surface, right? Even when she was the best player on earth and winning Grand Slam, she still struggled on clay. You know, so if I'm in Osaka's team, I'm saying, listen, this is upside. We're going to get our body right. We're going to work on fitness. We're going to make sure coming out of it, we're getting match reps, even the tough match reps that are going to exist on clay. Let's twist that and say, hey, listen, let's go through these tough moments. It's going to serve us well later in the year. And if something great happens, even better. Like, let's go. Let's roll. Let's get some reps in.
Yeah, and the biggest weapon for Osaka, I think, is expectation, you know, because she's such a great player. So we always expect her to play great. Look, she's coming off hard courts in Tokyo, Billie Jean King Cup. She's going to need some time on the clay. She's got to figure out how to play her game on a clay court. She doesn't need to change things, figure out how to do that competently and confidently. That's about reps. That's about being healthy. And that's about a clear game plan with a lot of confidence.
All right. She opens her run in Rouen, France, against Martina Trevisan of Italy. That is going to do it for this edition of TC Live. Andy, thanks for a great week. We'll see you again in TC Live in Madrid and a new episode of Served coming tonight.
Tonight. That's it. That's it, Brad. Thanks for watching. Thanks for having me. Cohen, you're the best. Thanks, brother.
Keep up the good work. Watch the podcast, everybody. It is awesome.
All right, for Andy and Paul and all of us at Tennis Channel, I'm Brett. We will see you tomorrow for day one of Barcelona and Stuttgart. Congrats to Tsitsipas wins Monte Carlo, episode 3.